There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, are you ready to elevate your personal brand or company? Meet Viral Growth, your one-stop shop for video content and audience building. Imagine growing your brand organically on social media without the hassle of editing videos for hours. With Viral Growth, it's a breeze. They handle the brainstorming, scripting, and editing while you simply just hit record. And don't worry about your niche. They cater to everyone, from business and marketing to health and wellness. Are you ready to make waves in the social media realm? Visit viralgrowth.io and use code ADWEEK, that's ADWEEK, all lowercase, and get 10% off your plan.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Tech Magic. I am your host, Kathy Hackle. We are here to talk about technology, innovation, gaming, and get a sneak peek into the future and what might be coming. I'm joined today by my guest co-host, or I just call you co-host, Lee Keebler.
I'm going to graduate one day, I swear.
You will, you will.
I'm a real boy.
How you doing, Lee?
I'm great. I've had just a really relaxing weekend and week, and I'm not at South by Southwest, so I'm getting like full night's sleep and not being distracted and not running my shoes off back and forth across Austin, unlike yourself.
Yes, hello from Austin. I am at South by Southwest. Been very busy. Almost didn't make it to record this episode, as you know.
I thought I was doing this one solo. I was like, oh, yep. I'm gonna say all the bad thoughts. I'm gonna say the angry.
I had to be here to kind of reel you in. Come on, Lee. No. We can't have that. So it's been really interesting. Very busy couple of days. Obviously, like you mentioned, lots of walking around, lots of, you know, meeting folks, looking at tech, having great conversations. Obviously, a lot of focus on AI. I feel like it's, you know, like I don't even know how many sessions are AI focused, but I would say a lot of them. Really interesting conversations, different perspectives, those that, you know, want to accelerate AI faster, those that are a little bit more skeptical and think we need definitely guardrails and those sorts of things. So really interesting, great sessions. I mean, our friend Sandy Carter, who was one of my guests on AIQ, did a fantastic keynote session that, you know, standing room only, where she did talk about spatial computing, and fantastic session. Amy Webb also, she always does her future trends report, which we'll include a link in the show notes. Launched that here, and her keynote was fantastic this year. She talked a lot about a technology super cycle and how we're at this really interesting moment with the convergence of different technologies, which is one of the things that you and I talk about all the time here on this podcast.
It is. You have a talk tomorrow, though, right? Okay, so we're recording this on Monday. It goes live on Wednesday. I think everyone knows that at this point if you've listened to more than two episodes. But your talk is tomorrow?
Yeah, my talk is tomorrow. It's on the XR stage. So it's a keynote on the XR stage. The XR, the extended reality stage and extended reality part of the show is not in the main conference center, the main Austin conference center. It's in one of the hotels, but it's still pretty big. They've got multiple floors. The room's pretty awesome. So I'm excited. I stopped by today to kind of just check it out. And yeah, I'm going to be talking about spatial computing and AI wearables. My hope with the talk, and you know, eventually they'll put it on YouTube. So maybe we can include a link in the future. My hope with the talk is to kind of expand people's understanding of spatial computing into not just mixed reality or just one device, right? So expand that further and truly, you know, just like Amy Webb talked about this technology super cycle that we're in, talk about how spatial computing, in my perspective, is the evolution and the expansion of computing. And it's about to change a lot of things. So, and also kind of help people make sense of what this means in the context of the metaverse and, you know, metaverse slash spatial web. And, and yeah, so I'm excited. I'm really pumped and, you know, hopefully we'll get a good crowd. And, you know, every time I get on stage, I give it my all. So it'll be fun.
Well, you've been at South By for a couple of days, right? Mm-hmm. One or two, two or three,
yeah,
something like that. Have you seen anything worth mentioning? Like, oh, this is on the come up.
I don't know. I mean, cause there's so much to see. I don't know. I mean, I walked around the exhibit hall. They had a whole section from Korea. It was called the Korea Metaverse section because, you know, they really have embraced the metaverse. Like the metaverse is still a thing in Korea. So South Korea, yeah. Like still a thing. People still like the word.
Korea is in the future. I've said this. Like anyone who's looked at South Korea, like even when you look at their adoption of touchscreens and like displays and NFC integrations into things, even just on like their public transit, they are living in a different year than us. Like they make us look like the Stone Age.
100%. So they had a whole section called the Korea Metaverse section. Some startups using AI, some startups using XR for like K-pop stuff. It was really interesting. So I walked that area because I find South Korea fascinating, and for the same reasons you just mentioned. So that was good.
I find North Korea fascinating too, but for completely different
reasons.
For
the wrong reasons. Yeah, for the bad reasons. Yeah, no. What else? The Army had, like the Armed Forces had like a big sponsorship. So they had an area where they had the U.S. Army recruiting. CIA was there recruiting. I actually, you know, I live in the D.C. area. So like these are people, you know, I knew some people there. Talked to the CIA quite a bit about some of the work that they're doing. So it was fascinating. There was actually some controversy around that, and people decided not to come, et cetera, because of the sponsorship. But, you know, regardless, I went to see them on the show floor, and it was interesting what they were showcasing, and they're trying to recruit tech talent.
Of course they are. And and that totally makes sense. Like that's just been part of our, you know, government outreach for before I was born. So decades and decades. With all of the AI conversation batting around at South By this year, real talk, do you think that it's productive and healthy, or do you think that this is the wrong, like you're hearing the wrong conversation?
I think it's productive and healthy if you have a balance of voices, in the sense that, you know, I've talked about Gary Marcus before, and I'm hoping we get him on the podcast. He has a very different perspective. He's kind of a contrarian voice, as opposed to everyone saying, you know, AI is this and AI is that. And like, so he has a little bit of a different perspective. So I think if you have varying perspectives, it's important. I think the panels that were all like, AI is the best thing in the world. And AI, like, I'm like, no, let's take a step back. Right. You know, the models are not as perfect as people think. In my perspective,
right. And you would know so much.
The models are not as perfect.
ChatGPT.
So yeah, those types of panels that are overly optimistic and like a little bit naive in my perspective, you know, I think the balance is needed in kind of having different perspectives and everything. But everything, I do feel everything's a remix in the sense that at some point everything was metaverse.
Right.
Now everything's AI. So every single booth has AI this, right? Every panel's AI this. It's a little bit deja vu in some ways.
Oh, yeah. For me, just even watching it from afar and going through news updates, it's very deja vu. And it's almost like deja vu to a frustrating point where it's like, when are we going to like learn this cycle and accept it for what it is? You know, because you and I started in like the VR AR space. We were thrilled to see the metaverse conversation start. And I still think that there's a lot of value conceptually in that technology as it grows. It's like saying, you know, Roblox or Fortnite are going away. No, it's not. The buzzword is changing. Like the interest is finally catching up with the practicality of it all. And I think that that's the part that I'm hearing from you about AI still needs to get through the good Lord. This isn't like the magic box. But it is cool, and it is a necessary and going to be a constant part of our future. But man, we gotta talk.
But I think a balance. I think balance conversations are important. So, for example, Amy Webb talked about fear, uncertainty, and doubt in her keynote. And you definitely sense that, right? Especially it's an election year, you know, in many different countries, including the U.S. AI, you know, lots of stuff happening. Even here, being here at the show, there was a whole controversy with Kate Middleton putting out an image. You know, it was the first, it was an image for Mother's Day, but it's the first image that they've put out, you know, after her abdominal surgery. And apparently it was edited, you know, it wasn't created with AI. That's not what happened. It's more like Photoshopped or something like that. But there's a whole discussion around that. So that was kind of like a lot of people just having conversations around that. So yeah, it's it's been interesting.
Whew. Well, you're there for at least another day. I don't know if you're there. I mean, it's South by such a long event. It's like way longer than any other type of conference that I'm familiar with. Because it like transitions from tech to music. And so I've got a lot of people, like a lot of my music friends out there are they're just now arriving and getting there for like all of the music what's the word I want to use? Hobnobbery, all of the, you know, getting out and networking and talking about their next projects and concerts and things like that. So it is always funny to talk to my different friends who are at South By because they will give me a completely different recap from my tech family that are down there discussing a very like niche market. It's always interesting to me. Moving on to news, though. Mm-hmm. Minecraft has come out of nowhere this week. Announcement of their movie being in the works. And of course, it stars Jack Black.
Of course.
Of course. It, as soon as I saw that, I'm like, man, this dude has a promoter or PR management that just has it nailed down for video. I mean, one, his Bowser from Mario Brothers was the character, right? Like, just stole the show. So seeing him come in as Steve, which is what, the most recognizable, I think the only named character in Minecraft. And they said they were shooting this in New Zealand, which tells me that there's live action. That I am incredibly interested to see how this plays out. I've not done a ton of digging into what the Minecraft movie is going to look like or anything like that. I just saw Jack Black and was like, yeah.
Yeah, it's Jack Black, Jennifer Coolidge, I think John Cena. And for those of you that are listening, so pretty much Minecraft, they had announced it in January, but somehow I missed it. But there were more news last week saying Jack Black's going to be one of the actors. But yeah, there's a Minecraft live action movie coming. I told my kids. And they're like, what? How are they even going to do that? And I told them it was Jack Black. And they're like, wasn't he in Jumanji? Because they love the Jumanji movies. The newer ones, not the
Robin. I was going to say, now, hold on now. Hold on.
The newer Jumanji ones, okay? The video game Jumanji ones, not the tabletop game. So yeah, like I'm excited to see what they end up doing, how they bring that world to, you know, to the big screen.
I got a little bit of Jack Black trivia for you.
Okay.
You know, this is where we hop in the DeLorean again and we go
do it.
Way back. One of Jack Black's earliest parts was in a commercial. And it may have been his first part, but I'm not willing to go as far to say that that's the case. And it also was in, it was for a video game. Can you name that game?
No. What is it?
Atari's Pitfall.
I don't even know what Pitfall is. Like,
you've seen Pitfall. Yeah, you've seen Pitfall. It's one of the first platformer games. Anyways, it was one of the launching titles of Activision when they came to create games for the Atari 2600. And Jack Black is a little kid wearing a honestly, what's crazy,
it's Jack Black as a little kid right now. You're right.
And he's wearing the same hat that he was wearing in Jumanji, the little explorer's hat, talking about all of the amazing things you can play in Pitfall. It's the most adorable commercial. So, I mean, it doesn't surprise me to see Jack Black in all of these video game movies because he started by pitching video games and ads all the way back then, which there's your tech magic trivia.
It was written in the stars. Oh, that's so funny. That is so funny. Wow. Yep.
It all comes back to that nostalgia. Mm-hmm. Nintendo's killing it with the nostalgia stuff, by the way. Big news is, for those who are Nintendo fans, Paper Mario 1000, Paper Mario had an RPG come out years and years and years ago. And it was just like epically popular. I think it's probably one of the better Paper Mario's out there, but Paper Mario and the Thousand Year Door is getting a re-release on the Nintendo Switch this month, May 23rd. And it is this ongoing thing that I see Nintendo doing kind of while we're all waiting for what's their next console, right? And I think there was some expectation when they announced that we're not going to see a new Switch until like 2025, that it could like potentially hurt or wane the interest. But what I see is them entering, and I think we've talked about this before, of like, they're kind of entering that Disney vault, you know, stage of their existence where they've got all of this great gaming intellectual property that just needs to be refreshed. And there's a whole new generation that can play it and find a lot out of it because it's still a great game. And as they're doing this, it's working. You know, I think the last two or three games that I bought on the Switch have all been what they're calling remasters. And this will be the next one. I actually didn't get to play this one when it came out. It was an N64 game. So to see it come out, I'm definitely going to be picking this one up. But what is kind of interesting is they also were in the middle of a lawsuit this week where they went after an emulation company, Yuzu, who creates an emulator that allows you to play old Nintendo games that were like arguably out of print, right? So if you wanted to play a game and you don't have like an actual piece of hardware, and obviously they're not selling cartridges or games anymore, a lot of people emulate those games. They went after and stopped one of the major emulation companies in a lawsuit. And there was a lot of up in arms about this because they're like, well, these are the only way we can play these games. And honestly, the players have a point. Like, that's true. But it really does go, like, they could have gone after Yuzu for a very long time and they chose not to.
What do you think they're doing it now?
To me, the why now is because I think this is their plan for the rest of the Switch until they can release new hardware. I think we're going to see a continuation of them going back into the Nintendo vault at this point and pulling out really great games and converting them to be played on the Nintendo Switch, upgrading the graphics, remastering, whatever you want to call it. And this trend will probably be what we see more of going all the way to 2025, leading up to, you know, whatever the Switch 2 or whatever they want to call
Whatever they want to call it. Yeah, the next Switch. Yeah, and we can't wait for that. I mean, my son's like, when is it coming?
So. Yeah, well, a couple more years.
Gotta wait, honey. Gotta wait. So another thing in gaming that I wanted to bring up, and I think we should talk about this because there is a gaming element here, but then we're going to talk about social media, like a big, big news item, right? So as I was kind of walking back to the hotel room to record the podcast, I was reading in a big talk here on the show is related to the potential ban or sale of TikTok, right? From ByteDance to an American company. So people are calling it a TikTok ban. It's not really that. It's more like you have to divest yourself from the ownership has to change if the company wants to continue work, you know, operating in the United States. So as I'm walking here, I read that the former CEO of Activision actually is considering buying TikTok. And I was like, he's a gaming guy. I mean, he's been in tech for a long time, right? But from Activision, he has a lot of experience in gaming. And there was that study, I think we shared it before, that says that the majority of people are finding mobile games through TikTok. TikTok is the search engine for a lot of Gen Z. This includes the gamers that are finding mobile games through TikTok. So I thought that there's a really interesting connection there as to, you know, the gaming element, the fact that it is, you know, one of the people that is one of the first people to come out and say, I want to buy TikTok or potentially buy it is a former CEO of Activision Blizzard. Like, there's an element there, and there's a huge thing, you know, related to TikTok and gaming beyond just the social media element of it. But I want to mention that, and I know that you and I have talked about some of the TikTok issues and you know, the potential. It's not a ban. Like, I think people need to understand it's not like a ban. It's more like it cannot be owned by this foreign company that, you know, is a Chinese company, et cetera, et cetera.
And that's so, not actually a big, like, that. I think people get hung up on that. And it's like, that's actually pretty status quo for other countries, right? There's a line in the sand, especially with the addition with GDPR kind of becoming a governance for how user data is managed. It has set other expectations. You know, there are many countries where if you create data on their shore and it is user data, that data has to stay on their shore. Mm-hmm. So like, I don't quote me on this, but I believe like Japan is one of those where if I am connected to a server in Japan, and again, this might not be accurate for Japan, but it's accurate for other countries. But I think Japan falls into this. If I create data on a server in Japan, it actually has to stay there on that server. It cannot be shuttled to another server, especially if it is the data native to Japan's residents. And so this isn't really, we're one of the few countries that don't really seem to worry about that, which worries me, that our data can just like fly everywhere. And I'm not saying that other places don't have like breaches or something like that, but I'm all for this. Not as a ban, but as a ownership and where that data goes, because that's part of a much larger digital conversation that most people aren't having, right? We'd rather have the conversation of, is TikTok addictive? Yes, it's addictive. No one should be having that conversation. It's just like,
It truly is, though. Like, yeah.
Of course it is. This isn't an argument. TikTok's addictive.
It's designed to do that, yes.
Many video games are addictive, right? Mm-hmm. Hopefully our podcast is addictive and you want to listen to the next one. That's not the conversation. The conversation is, where does all of that data, all of that information, and how is it getting also targeted back towards us?
Yeah.
That becomes a sticky situation. And I think we've seen that really rear its the ugliest side of itself in the last, you know, couple of years, especially within the last decade. It needs to get under control.
I would also say there's so much division, right, within the government and, you know, the Senate and the Congress and everything, that I feel like this is something that they might all align behind, most of them at least. So I don't know. It's like a really interesting moment to see what happens with it. And then, you know, as someone that has traveled to China, you know, plenty of American companies don't, you know, their apps don't work in China.
Yeah.
Right. So thinking that this could happen in the United States is not far-fetched, right? It, you know, was banned in India, for example. There's no TikTok there. And once again, this isn't a ban. It's, you know, it's really more like you have to sell this off, then you have to divest yourself. It cannot be owned by a Chinese company, right?
I think that's fair, right? Like, there, let's be clear, there is a potential for a ban if it's not, you know, divested and brought into some form of like U.S. ownership. And I can get behind that. I was behind, there was not much that I agreed with the last administration. There just really wasn't. That's not what this show's about. But when Huawei got blacklisted, I understood it. You know, it is one of those that is, if they can't meet a specific guideline to getting hardware secure where we know where that data lives, then that's the risk of not being able to do business in a different market, right? This is simply business. That made a lot of sense. And I don't see our cell market suffering for having a lack of Huawei. Would it do better if it did have it? Maybe, but I think they would do better if they had access to the U.S. market as well, if they can adhere to making hardware in a way that meets U.S. standards. Like, that's just the game. Mm-hmm. Anyways, enough of that.
No, but I agree with you. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what happens in the next couple of weeks, right? It's going to be a hot topic. I think everyone's going to be talking about it, especially in the tech sector. And then if there is that sale, like, you know, very interesting that that's like the first person that I see.
It is very
expressing
telling.
Interest. I mean, I'm sure. I mean, any of the bigger companies would want TikTok, right? I mean, from that perspective. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
If I've seen anything over the years, it's that these social media companies really can change overnight, right? As someone who I think came into college right when MySpace was blowing up and then watched it turn into Facebook, got really into Facebook, left Facebook, was into Twitter's, now X, now I'm not on Twitter. Like all of the changes is just... it's just shuffling people's opinions around. It's just shuffling people's data around. And I've not found my personal use case. I've not found a good reason to utilize TikTok, but I recognize its popularity. I recognize why people do use it. And I think they'll find a way to get it done right. I don't think TikTok's actually going away.
I remember when it was Musical.ly. Like that's like,
that was... I remember when it was Musical.ly, you'd brought that up on a chat earlier, and mm-hmm. it was like a hardcore dose of techno nostalgia. I had forgotten Musical.ly, because it kind of came out at the same time as Reverb Nation and a few other platforms that came out, and I was working in the music industry and I was working in radio particularly there, and I had a Musical.ly account. I didn't put two and two together that Musical.ly turned into TikTok. I did not know that until you pointed that out to me. I was like, oh, that's right. That company.
Yeah. I still remember it. I mean, it was interesting. Let's see. I think we should also talk about some of the other gaming news, right? A lot of stuff happening between Apple and Epic Games. Maybe you can fill people, like give people the refresher on what's going on here.
This was such a crazy roller coaster.
I was grabbing my popcorn, by the way. I was like, okay, what else is happening here?
And I'm not entirely sure what happened, but in 1 week, and I mean literally days apart, Apple in the EU bans Epic Games and is like, no, we don't think that you're going to be a trusted partner. Like they go hardcore on this conversation and just call them out and say, we don't think you're a trusted partner. Days later, they come back, they unban Epic Games. Now Epic Games is unbanned on Apple in the EU. Oh, it is just like watching fighting cousins. Just, can y'all just get along?
It's like a video game.
It is so, so bad. They are so mad at each other, and yet they both need each other. It is, if these were people, they would be on Jerry Springer. Like it's just name calling and anger getting bat around. And they both have a point. Like that's what is so wild about this is like Apple's got a point. So does Epic Games. And what is interesting about this story is none of this is actually happening in the US. They are both leveraging EU laws to ban and unban themselves. So it's just like the wildest game of like Uno over here, where it's just reverse cards back and forth over and over and over again as they pull out weird lines of law. So that's all I know. Supposedly Fortnite might now be coming to iOS. Oh, by the time this podcast hits, they might be banned again. We don't know.
A lot of banning happening. I mean, TikTok. I mean, goodness, lots of banning everywhere. So one thing that their CEO, of Electronic Arts of EA, which is a different company than Epic, the gaming company, big gaming. He came out and said something interesting at an event. I think he was doing a talk. He said that 60% of their game development could be impacted by artificial intelligence. So, and he said a week after laying off hundreds of employees. Yeah. So.
I mean, yes, in a sense, AI is obviously going to impact game development. I don't think it'll impact 60%. I think it will impact 100% of game development, right? Just as the computer, you know, getting access to the internet impacted 100% of game development, right? People used to make video games. Back in the day, one developer was the video game. You would get a video game. It was made by one person. They did the whole story. They did the whole video game development. They did all of the graphics. The only other part of the team were the people who put the art on the box, right? And this, that was how it was done way, way, way once upon a time. AI is going to impact the game industry. I don't think it impacts the game industry like CEOs are hoping it's going to impact the industry. It is the goal of a CEO in many of these large companies, especially when you start getting to the size of like an EA, who is one of those original third-party game developers, by the way, Electronic Arts, going back to the 80s. They see it as a cost-saving measure, and I just don't know if it is that. I think it's just a tool. It's a tool that's going to make people do better work faster, but that should increase quality and output in the long range. But I don't. It doesn't replace the person. And if it does replace that person's goal should be to adjust and move to a better role in their growth, right? This is the whole concept behind career growth. Like, this is basic work career growth knowledge of as things change over your career, you should be training yourself to move into a better and higher position to do better and higher quality of work in an area, hopefully, that you enjoy being in. And I think that we're going to see the exact same thing here. I was getting coffee this morning with a friend of mine who we were talking about AI and this whole concept of where it impacts people's jobs. And when I started in radio, we're talking 2003, I was at this little radio station in Nashville, Tennessee, and I was not hired to be on the air. I was hired to transfer their CD catalog, rip it into the computer, log it so that its playback could come from the computer instead of a CD cart. And I was young enough to know how to do that. This was a very new concept for radio back in the day. Prior to that, they played actual CDs off of CD carts. And prior to that, they played it off of tapes. And prior to that, they played it directly off the record vinyl. The program manager, the guy who was leading the radio station, when he started, and he used to tell me these stories, he was an older guy. When he started, he was the guy who came in and actually cut the tape. He had a wax pencil. He'd cut the tape. He'd put it together. Like, that was a big part of radio, you know?
Yeah.
And my mind couldn't wrap. And still, I think of that and go, wow, I would have no idea how to do that. And then when CDs became the norm and they got off of tape, he revolutionized that radio station and brought them into the CD era. And that's what propelled him into becoming the program manager for the radio station. And then he hired me to do what he didn't know how to do. Mm-hmm. Now, the job of the tape cutter was long gone, right? Mm-hmm. Even the job of like getting CDs converted and like the radio station converted to CDs was long gone. But he used that to become the program manager of that radio station. Mm-hmm. And then he hired someone who knew how to do what he didn't know how to do. That's all this AI stuff is, right? Of like, cool, here's a new tool. How do you leverage it in your career to take your next career path a step up? And for whatever reason, people don't see it like that. Or the articles don't see it like that. The writers don't see it like that. I think the people on keynote stages don't see it like that. But that is what's going to happen. There is not some massive like job exodus here. It's just opportunity.
So this is something that hadn't been reported before. Sam Altman says AI will handle 95% of marketing work done by agencies and creatives. So he said 90% of what marketers use agencies, strategists, and creative professionals for today will be done by AI. And there's been a lot of conversation on LinkedIn about this quote and what he meant by that and everything. And once again, Gary Marcus had a really interesting perspective. He said, remember that Sam's trying to raise a lot of money, right? For a company that is not profitable for, you know, for OpenAI and everything. So why would he say this? Like, what would be the reason that someone would say this? So yeah, like I think I take a step back and I'm like, why would he say this? What is the motivation here? You know, so yeah, like, do I really think AI is going to do 95% of the work in marketing? I don't think it's going to be 95. I think it's going to be a percentage. I think that percentage might be too high.
Totally.
I don't necessarily believe that what he says is gospel, though. I think that that's something else that we all need to kind of understand. you know, I think marketing will be impacted in a good way and a bad way, just like it's been before.
Sure.
But yeah, but like, is it 95%? I think when people see this and then they immediately assume that what he says is gospel, that bothers me because I'm like, once again, like you're saying, there is going to be job replacement, but it'll be certain types of jobs. It doesn't mean that everything in marketing will be automated or will be done by AI, because I still think that there is room for the human creativity side. I think there's still room for a brand like Liquid Death. Like, they're very creative. They think outside the box. Is this something that AI is going to create? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either. And most people who are close to the wires on this already are seeing the patterns, right? Mm-hmm. I can tell if someone submits something to me that was written by AI. There are literal, now those patterns will blur, but it will get better. I'm not discounting that. I'm simply saying that in all of this, people still have their passions, and I don't think that gets away from what will really happen, right? Every piece of my career has been disrupted by technology, and I've learned how to adapt and do more, and I'm better today than I ever thought I could have been 20 years ago. And it's because of the increase of technology and not being afraid of it. It's about the acceptance of it and saying, cool, new tool. Now what can I do that I never thought I could do before? That's important. That's the part that we all need to, like, I think, gravitate towards, because to suggest that, oh, it's just going to do everything for us all the time. Okay, cool. Let's assume that it does. Now what are you going to do?
What can you do?
Right? Like, that shouldn't be a scary thing. It should be a liberating thing of like, great, I don't have to do these crappy parts of the job. I don't need to sit down and do this. Like, it's like spell check, right? Like,
yeah,
I love spell check. Has it made me a better speller? Absolutely not. I can't spell the word necessary to save my life. I cannot spell the word restaurant to save my life. Now I don't have to. Great. I can move on. There are just those words, you know?
I get it. So I think let's go on a break. And then when we get back, I want to talk a little bit about the spatial computing industry, some of the news that has been coming out. Also some of the things that I've heard at South by Southwest related to spatial. So let's go on a break.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, podcast fam. Are you ready to break free from the social media rut? Hold on to your hats, because we've got just the thing for you. Meet Viral Growth, your one-stop shop for leveling up your online presence. Whether you're a personal brand or a company, they've got the tools and know-how to take you to the next level. With Viral Growth, forget about those endless hours of video editing. They handle everything from brainstorming to polishing your content, so you can just focus on being awesome. And guess what? We're hooking you up with a sweet deal. Use code ADWEEK for 10% off when you sign up. Ready to take your social media game to the next level? Head on over to viralgrowth.io and let's turn those digital dreams into a reality.
All right. So wanted to share some of the things I'm seeing here at South By and that I'm hearing as it pertains to spatial computing, which is a topic that we talk a lot about here, right? We already talked about AI because I feel like every podcast has to talk about AI. Because everyone wants to talk about AI, but let's think about, you know, what other things are on the horizon. So this is actually a LinkedIn post from Jeremy Dalton, who's the head of immersive technologies at PwC US. He's a good friend. And he's been here for a few days. And he said, MIT Technology Review just announced the Apple Vision Pro as one of the top 10 breakthrough technologies of 2024. So they're the CEO of the MIT Technology Review, Elizabeth Bramson Boudreau, acknowledged that VR and AR have been around for a while. So what is different now? What is different is Apple. And she said, Apple knows more about the consumer technology than any other company. And it's also the most immersive experience this person has had. She finished by acknowledging that, you know, the high price is unaffordable to most, obviously, like you and I have discussed. But once it drops, the technology is expected to be transformational. So that was one of the things. Then there was this tweet from Amy Webb's talk by Lindsay Bennett. She tweeted out when Amy was talking about face supremacy and face computers. AI will run out of data from the internet soon. This will give birth to thousands of AI devices designed to capture new data on humans' everyday activities. So Amy Webb predicts face computers will become readily available and normalized and will lead to pupil tracking. So there's this whole conversation around face computers, spatial computing, in essence, that is through some type of wearable. So those are some of the things that I'm hearing here. I haven't seen that many Apple Vision Pros on the show floor. There are a couple experiences in the XR expo area. But what I think is important here is also to mention an article that I shared with you that Americans, it's from Ipsos, which does tons of amazing research, right? About Americans are not yet interested in spatial computing. Like the data of people searching for spatial computing or being interested in it is not, we're not seeing the levels of interest that we saw, for example, with something like Metaverse, right?
Well, it's because I don't think spatial computing is a buzzword.
I'm with you. Yeah. Which is a good thing. I think it's actually good that Americans are not interested in it yet.
Yeah. I don't think we'll see people go looking for, and I don't think it's Apple's goal to have people looking, Googling spatial computing. Mm-hmm. They want you to Google Apple Vision Pro.
Yeah, it's right? true.
Like that's, I just don't think it's a buzzword that they're aiming for. Maybe that's our mistake for considering it one.
Well, that's a good point. You know, I mean, because one of the things I'm doing in my talk, like I mentioned, is expanding people's view of it. So it's not a single technology. It's not one technology, right? It's a computing, the computing shift. It's an expansion. So like,
it's would a anyone mesh at the beginning, in a
way. Yeah. Would anyone at the beginning Google mobile computing? Like, yeah, probably not, right? Probably Google mobile phone or iPhone or, you know, BlackBerry. So that's a really interesting point.
It's not called the Spatial Computing App Store, right? You know, it's the Vision Pro App Store, and it'll probably be called the Vision App, you know, the Vision App Store, whatever they want to call it. Like they'll work that part out. I'm also seeing articles already. Tom's Guide is probably the biggest one. Came out a day ago, saying that reportedly they're accelerating their entry level, what's being quote unquote called an entry level version of the Vision, and it should cost less than $2,000. Again, this is all internet gossip, so take the tea with what you will. But it is interesting that there's a lot of buzz still around. Hey, when is this going to become a more obtainable function? And I honestly do think the next version is less than a year away. And I do think it'll be under $2,000. Mm-hmm. My prediction, and this is not based on anything other than what
we're
going
to save this one. We're going to save this.
We'll
prediction
save it and come back to it. I think we're going to see an Apple Vision Air. I'm going to go with Air. I'm going to say they're going to call it the Air, okay. And they're going to promote it being lighter. I think it'll be $1,800. And I think we'll see it in 9 months.
I don't know. 9 months? Maybe. You know what? I don't know anymore.
I'm not basing it off of anything. It's my gut. It's just a gut.
Yeah. Well, I think if they move fast on the AI and spatial computing, which is where they're moving all the people from the car project and the funds are moving to AI and spatial computing. And basically the hardware is the container for AI, right?
So
that could be possible. Like that could be possible. That could be, they're going to put it in the phone and they're going to put it in the device. So, you know, you might not be too far off. Who knows?
It's possible. I mean, they've got the form factor figured out. They have the OS figured out. They've got stuff going into the App Store. The areas that they can make it lighter and cheaper are material at this point. and they probably need to do an M3 chip boost to be able to continue calling it a Pro anyways, because right now it's running on in the M2. I mean, it launched with the last gen processor, previous gen processor. It's not with the M3. So I don't know. I could see a way. And then my prediction is basically based on gut, but also there's some logic in my madness.
Yeah.
I think they kind of have to, because, and we don't have this in the show notes, so I'm just dropping this here in the podcast. There is this ongoing question. Users are reporting in some rare cases that the glass is splitting in the middle of it due to like maybe heating issues or things like this. It keeps popping up online. They're doing everything they can to replace it when it does happen, but the crack has proven to be an ongoing thing.
Hashtag crackgate. Yeah, I've heard that. Yeah.
Crackgate is a conversation. Now, to Apple's benefit, they're doing the right thing and they're, you know, replacing. And it's not like, it's not a situation where it is happening to every single person's unit. I think it, no one really knows why, but I think it's coming from extreme, intense, long periods of time in use, probably a heat issue, where it was never meant to like run that long. But yeah.
I mean, crap, super users.
Yeah. Yeah.
I checked mine. Mine's fine. She hasn't gotten one. So why am I saying she? I don't know. My Apple Vision Pro is a girl, I guess.
Does your Vision Pro have a name? Have you named it?
No, she doesn't. But I guess I'm calling her a she. I don't know why. Yeah, but my Apple Vision Pro didn't have a. I went and checked. I was like, "Is my Apple Vision Pro okay?"
I've seen it pop up with a few. I've not seen any happen in my own. But all of that to say, Apple's approach for spatial computing is really more of a blanket statement. Mm-hmm. I was on a conference earlier this week for Yonder. It was a really interesting tech conference out in EU, and one of the questions came up of like, what's the difference of spatial computing? And I said, spatial computing doesn't stop in the headset. It's not about the headset. It's about the phone. It's about everything else that it's pulling data from to understand its surroundings. And that's what makes it different and makes it important. And I think it does. You and I've had this conversation and I'd love for you to give more of your perspective on it, but it does also include AI as being part of that conversation.
100%. That's part of the talk tomorrow. He's like, what's the role of AI?
I'm giving away the talk.
You're giving away. Yeah, no, but we'll definitely talk a little bit more about that. One of the things I want to do, so I did this at Mobile World Congress because I put on the device and I walked around the show floor with it with a friend of mine who also had it. And, you know, we got lots of stares and views and pictures and people were like, I'm going to wear it here at South By tomorrow. I know that's kind of like a weird stunty kind of thing. But I want to see what happens because I haven't seen that many on the show floor. I've seen people in stands saying, scan here and win an Apple Vision Pro, which I thought was funny. I was like, it's such a personal device. Like they normally have to scan your face to give, you know, you have to like, in order to buy it, you have to scan your face. So I was like, how are they going to pull this off? I guess they'll just transfer it over. But I don't know.
I still want to see, I want to see a FaceTime with you using it. I've not seen your persona. I want to see the persona.
Yeah. Yeah. Now that it's getting better, I'm good. Like, I think, yes, I'm ready. I'm ready for her. I'm ready for her to be shown to the world because it's getting a little bit better. It was just really bad at the beginning. So.
Oh yeah. I heard it was pretty creepy, but now I've heard better. That, like, it's not perfect. Updates or something.
You know, it's getting better. So I just wasn't ready to kind of show her to the world.
I'm ready.
So that's one thing. So I'll report back. I'll kind of walk around, see what happens and, you know, see what people ask or
get some photos.
If anyone pays attention, I'm sure they will, but we'll see.
Yeah, sure.
We'll see what happens. So now I want to go to Lily, who has a dispatch from the Fringe that gives me serious Chucky, the evil doll vibes. So Lily, take it away.
Hello, Kathy and Lee. Welcome to this week's Dispatch from the Fringe, where we enter the valley of creepy AI dolls. Now, are they creepy or actually useful? Companies have been looking into robots or human helpers for some time, but now they're taking on a different shape. Instead of full-bodied humans, they're coming in the shapes of little cats and dogs and cuddly companions, like one company, Holdall, which is a Korean company that created an $1,800 ChatGPT-enabled companion doll. This doll has touch sensors, ear pressure sensors programmed with content to talk to their companion, can have hand pressure feedback, mics to record someone's voice, and motion sensors to detect a fall in a senior person. Now, according to the Korean company's website, their dolls have improved depression levels and increased medication intake in their companions that they stay with. The dolls are meant to tackle the loneliness epidemic and are really designed for any adult, from college students to seniors living alone. Now, this industry is in its infancy. There's a lot to take in when it comes to AI in a doll or pet, how humans react with that, and the connections that they form. Other companies that work in this industry and have created cuddly companions are LEIQ, an AI-enabled product made by an Israeli company, the Institution Robotics. And there's companies like Lovut and Kubo, which also created cuddly companions. So have we entered the creepy AI valley of dolls, or is this just the beginning of our future companions?
All right. Are you creeped out?
I get it. Yes, I'm thoroughly creeped out. I get it. Is there, who asked for this? Like, that's the part that sometimes, and I think actually the majority of Lily's segment can always resort back to one simple question of who asked for this?
Why does this exist? Yeah. I don't know.
But well, like, okay, but let's be honest. Like, cause I think you and I both remember the Furby craze. Now, I was a little too old for it, but like the Furby craze was real back in the day, late 90s. And a Furby powered by ChatGPT would have been amazing. And Furby was just as creepy, right? Like arguably even creepier, because as the batteries died, it got real X's. It was weird. Poltergeisty.
You didn't want Furby to make noise at night, because that that was very scary. Yes. No.
Also, this thing's like stupid expensive.
Yeah.
It's expensive.
I think older adults, older people, like I've seen the cats, like the robot cats that like older people want because they can't bring their cats or their pets to the nursing home. So, but this is a creepy AI doll. Right. So I'm like, I just got Chucky vibes. I'm like, okay, no.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I get it, but I don't want it.
Yeah. But maybe I'll get you one for Christmas.
That's cruel.
Although I'm like
weirdly honored that you would even consider the fact that you would spend that much on me for Christmas. I'm also kind of like, but I don't like you that
don't
much.
Don't save that. Let's tell Adweek not to save that part. I don't want to go. Yeah. Let's not save that. I'm just going to send you a box of chocolates. That'll be easier. Some flowers. Cheap. All right. Well, Lee, thanks for joining me again.
Every time. Have a great time at South by Southwest. Thank you so much. Thank you to all the listeners. Please continue to reach out. Let us know what you think. We love feedback in either direction. And feel back. And please leave your reviews.
Hey there. Are you ready to elevate your personal brand or company? Meet Viral Growth, your one-stop shop for video content and audience building. Imagine growing your brand organically on social media without the hassle of editing videos for hours. With Viral Growth, it's a breeze. They handle the brainstorming, scripting, and editing while you simply just hit record. And don't worry about your niche. They cater to everyone, from business and marketing to health and wellness. Are you ready to make waves in the social media realm? Visit viralgrowth.io and use code ADWEEK, that's ADWEEK, all lowercase, and get 10% off your plan.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.